How's it going, Dave?
Ben and JD, what's happening? I love how you guys are starting this because I love the Schadenfreude. When other people fail, I feel better about myself because I'm a negative person on the inside. So I'm with you on that 100%.
Are we bad people for that? Because, yeah, Kawhi Leonard did great things here. But everyone is happy today. Like, it really does feel like that was a Game 7 win for the city of Toronto.
No. That was not a Game 7 win for the city of Toronto. But I think that when you lose a Game 7, and I understand that you feel bad, but now you guys have had a few days to think about it. This was an amazing season. This was a really, really, really great Toronto Raptors season. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Yes.
Especially now the Kawhi loss.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's what I'll say, Dave. We started the show with we already knew the deal with the championship last year. It wasn't just Kawhi. There were moments where it was just Kawhi, but that team was incredible around him. They played incredible defense, start to finish. Was the offense sluggish at times? Yep. Was the offense sluggish at times this year? Yep. But doesn't matter. That team had championship caliber defense. We already know what the deal with this team was. That we didn't expect them to be out of the playoffs like some people predicted them to be this year in the Eastern Conference. But the basketball media at large, of which you are a part, does that change the Kawhi Leonard loss in Game 7 yesterday change your perception of the last 2 years of Toronto Raptors basketball?
No, it does not. If anything, it elevates what was accomplished last year. So I guess I just was hypocritical. It does change a little bit, but it elevates the accomplishments of last year. Not in a negative way, but it does make it seem like, you know what, there is a feeling around national media idiots like myself, and we'll talk about predicting them not to miss the playoffs in a second. I'm sure that you guys are familiar that I did that. But there's a feeling that was a Kawhi Leonard championship more than a Toronto Raptors championship. And I think that's sort of residual from him doing it with the Spurs and then doing it with the Raptors. And at the moment, everyone sort of favorites them being favorites to do it this year. So it sort of felt like, well, wherever Kawhi goes, he just brings the trophy with him and the finals MVP trophy. But I think that this loss last night sort of further legitimized the greatness that was the Raptors season last year.
Yeah, and we talked about this on yesterday's show, just the idea that everybody here knows that's the way it's perceived. And to be honest, Toronto, I would say that we're further on the other side of the spectrum now, where there's like this revisionist history that all the other Raptors did a little bit more than they actually did to get there, where it's like there's a lot of discussion about Siakam in Game 1 versus Draymond Green, or Kyle Lowry's Game 6 against the Warriors, or Norm Powell and Fred VanVleet against the Bucks and against the Warriors at the very end for playoff Fred, or Father Fred as we call them. But it's like, yeah, they don't even get there without Kawhi just hoisting the team on his back and forcing them into those rounds, right? Like, those guys got the luxury of time to start to round into form. So, yeah, I get it. I can see how people got to that conclusion, and I can see how people don't view the Raptors championship as anything but a Kawhi championship. But yeah, that's why this market was rooting so hard against it, is that they didn't want it to be dependent. They didn't want their title to just simply mold into one of Kawhi's titles. They wanted to keep it as a Toronto title. That being said, now that we have all of those pieces, now that we get to see everything the way that it is, what do we put on Kawhi Leonard? Because, like, I hate to say it, but if this was LeBron James and he left a title winner to go to Cleveland and they came up short, like if he left Miami after they were defending a championship, he goes to Cleveland, I don't know. Maybe it is different. But don't you think that there would be a lot of criticism here? Like, what should Kawhi own in terms of, yeah, leaving something good for something that he thought could be better and it failing?
Well, there's so much goes into that decision that is beyond basketball as well. And I think of all the NBA players that we all think we know something about their personality, Kawhi Leonard is probably the absolute last on that list. You know what I mean? In terms of like what makes him tick. So it's hard for me to get into his head when you make that decision. But one thing that I always tell my friends when I used to be like fun before I had kids and hang out, and I know Toronto's a great nightlife city, so I'll say this, is never leave a good party looking for a great party. You know, it's like you just won the championship. You've got all the pieces around you, and you've got one of the best, if not the best coach in the NBA. Like, the idea that you're going to piece together this new thing somewhere else and drag along Paul George with you and completely leverage the entire future of the Clippers organization in order to do so. Now it's easy to say after they just lost a Game 7, but when you look at it through that lens, it's like, Yeah, maybe you did just try to leave something great for something excellent, and in life that's generally a bad idea.
So this is, yeah, just watching that game is schadenfreude, watching the 3-1 series lead is schadenfreude. It's another, like, we need a new word for the idea of this only lasting one more year and Kawhi leaving and Steve Ballmer looking up at the sky and screaming, why? But I don't know how realistic that is. Like, when you see what's happened in year one, where does your mind go in regards to the future for that Clippers franchise?
Oh, they're for their favorites next year. I mean, they're going to re-sign. They've got Harrell and Green and Morris, who are their free agents. They'll probably re-sign two of those three. And, like, I'm not going to overreact because I really feel like I had Lakers this year, but it's really a toss-up between Lakers-Clippers in my mind. And I really feel like you've seen it when LeBron went to Miami. It kind of takes a year to kind of put it together, you know? So I feel like that this is not something where I'm going to feel like it is all broken. Doc Rivers is not the right coach. Kawhi Leonard can't get championships. I'm not going to overreact to this. I think that they're, if not the favorite, top three favorites with a large percentage chance to win the championship next year because they're going to keep the core together. There's not much else they can do. But you're, I want to talk to you guys about some. Your Toronto Raptors have some decisions to make this offseason. A lot of decisions to make this offseason.
Yeah, I think that it's going to be pretty straightforward for them. They pick one of Ibaka and Gasol, and hopefully it's Ibaka because I just think he has more left in the tank. And Gasol probably, you know, you tip the cap to the guy because he was excellent here, and they certainly don't win that championship without him. Like, when the pandemic hit, we did a podcast series just rewatching every single one of the games because that's what we all did. We rewatched old sports and hoped that we would see new ones again sometime. Like, that was that's where we were at. And we both came away thinking Gasol was the second most important player to them winning a championship last year. Like, he was incredibly understated in that run. But you probably let him walk and re-sign Serge. And then Fred VanVleet, we'll see, but with the pandemic and with the flat cap, from the guys that we've talked to, including, you know, your guys' Bobby Marks, it does seem as though the offer won't be as high as we once thought it would be, that the market might not be as big as it was, and that Toronto has a pretty good chance of bringing him back on either a fully loaded one-year deal to maintain as much flexibility as possible or a couple of years. So they look like they're in decent shape to run it back. I think their biggest question, I'll ask you that, is like, do you think that they're in a better position now after what you saw happen in the Celtics series to attract a free agent in 2021?
After next season?
Yeah, like
a little,
based on what you saw,
far down the road, because I don't think that what happened in the NBA bubble in Orlando during a pandemic when everyone's, the whole species' lives got turned upside down, is going to be as relevant a year after next season. I think that people have a recency bias, but I think that this team overperformed expectations, has a great culture, has a great coach, and I think that free agents are attracted to situations like that, as opposed to something like the Knicks, you know what I mean, where it's just like, it just seems like a mess. But I would agree also that Ibaka would be the one that I would keep between Ibaka and Gasol, and I also think that Gasol's haircut was the key to them losing the Celtics series. I really think that he shouldn't have gone with the haircut. That was a bad decision, just a bad decision from Gasol. I know,
so
but you just
before.
Don't change the mojo. Just don't change the mojo. He had the flow going. It was bouncing when he was running. Once I saw the haircut, I was like, oh, no, I don't feel good about this. I'm just telling you how it felt when I saw it.
Yeah, it was
a little desperate.
It was like when Norm Powell ditched his sleeves. There were a couple of different things where we thought, uh-oh, Raptors might be in their own heads a little bit here. I will say that yesterday, watching the Heat struggle out of the gate against that Boston defense, sometimes you do need to see another offense play someone else or another team play the team that beat you to recognize like how good that Celtics defense was, and that maybe we were freaking out about some stuff, but Jimmy Butler scores that bucket at the end of the game. It's beautiful. And I started to think to myself, how many guys would I rather have with the ball in their hand to close a game knowing they have to take the shot than Jimmy Butler? Do you think that the list is greater or less than five for you?
Oh, for me, definitely there's five other people in the league that I would rather take that shot. And also, if you think about that shot, like, I've watched that play a few times. You got Goran and Jay arguing with each other over who's supposed to set the pick or go where. Like, no, people forget about that. Jimmy looks at them miscommunicating and just says, you know what? I'm just going to go to the basket. Didn't even, like, make a jab step or a move or an inside out. Just put his head down, going to his right. And, like, that shot if it's still in his hand where he's leaning and being fouled, like what percentage chance do you think that shot has of going in over someone who's probably got 4 or 5 inches on him? Like I'm going 15-20%, and it just goes in. Like that was not necessarily a great look at the basket, but Jimmy Butler has done that time and time again in the fourth quarter in his career. But to directly answer your question, I could probably name off the top of my head 6 or 7 people that would I'd rather have take that last shot. And, you know, two of them we didn't see in the bubble, which would be Steph and KD, but that's kind of not fair. Even Kyrie, I'd put 3 that weren't even in the bubble in, above him in that.
That's fair, I suppose. But I think the point remains is that you're right. Yeah, who would have thought that shot would go in, especially when you look at Kirk Goldsberry's tweet yesterday, the least efficient jump shooters this season. It's Jimmy Butler by a wide margin. He had a 33.5% effective field goal percentage this season on jump shots, which is almost 7 percentage points lower than Jordan Poole. You will at least admit that this is the guy that numbers least apply to at the end of games, especially playoff games.
It, absolutely, absolutely. Because he is one of the, I think, you know, Hembo, the researcher for GetUp, says he's the worst, of qualifying players, he's the worst jump shooter in the league. However, throw that all out the window. That's part of the myth of Jimmy Butler, whether it's earned or whether it's true mythical, is in the fourth quarter, when he rises up for a 3-point contested shot, which is for him probably a 12% proposal, when I'm sitting on my couch, I'm like, oh, that's good. There's just something about it. It's just something about him. And whether it's earned or not earned or whether it will continue or won't continue, that's how I'm not lying about the way I feel when he rises up for a bad shot in the fourth quarter. I feel like it's going in, don't you?
Yes, that's what I mean. I was trying to think about this yesterday. Just, you know, there's always this debate in baseball of whether clutch is real. And Ben and I are both big proponents of clutch being real. And I don't know how you could confirm the existence of Jimmy Butler and then deny the existence of clutch. Like those two things, he's the embodiment of it to me in the NBA. Like he's part of this is definitely that this guy has killed the Raptors for his entire career, and so it's a bit of confirmation bias. Like that's all I've ever seen from him, and that, you know, you love players who play hard and have that engine and show up for regular season games, closing them like they're a game 7. I think Jimmy Butler has something in him where he believes, like I do, that at the end of games, he's one of the best, like 5-6 players in the NBA closing it. And when he puts his head down and goes to the basket, he knows he's going to score. Like, I'm terrified of him. I would rather see a lot of guys close a basketball game over Jimmy Butler go into the basket with a head full of steam. And I like that player a lot. We got to mention one thing about the Nuggets before we let you go, because yeah, that was an incredible performance by them, and everything will be made about the Clippers today. And Jamal Murray's at the podium talking about how all these reporters need to put respect on his name. Right. But what do you think about the Clippers? Because I thought that there was a little bit of, hey, maybe this is just another version of Portland where they're a good team, but they can't get over the hump team. When we're looking at them versus the Lakers, I know they have a shot here. Everyone picked the Clippers to win this series, but how have they changed your opinion of them just as a group throughout the bubble?
I'm just going to isolate this on Paul George. You know, because Kawhi Leonard has been very consistent. Last night he had a bad game. 6 for 22 is it's very off for Kawhi. He averages 30 points in the playoffs, and he's very consistent throughout the playoffs until last night. But Paul George has been down. He's been up. He said he saw, you know, he had mental health issues during the bubble experiences, which is something we've never seen before in the history of the NBA. But he has just been so inconsistent. And also this team, didn't they feel a little arrogant throughout the regular season and in the bubble? Like the mocking Dame, and it just sort of felt like for a franchise that has literally never gone to the conference finals to sort of act like everyone else needed to get up to their level, just now in hindsight seems a little arrogant and a little pompous and a little like maybe you guys should accomplish something like the Warriors did and then you can act like that. But you have not accomplished anything yet. Here you are. You know, just sort of like mocking Dame Lillard, who has shot down Paul George, like he said before. And Paul George just really did not look good in the bubble, not just in the playoffs, but in the bubble. And it makes me look at the duos that we talk about in the NBA. And I had Paul George and Kawhi Leonard much higher in the duo power rankings before the bubble experience. And then now I have them much lower after. I just feel like they might be a little redundant and not complementary.
Yeah, and I've got Jokic and Murray very high on my duos.
Yes.
Making my duos list. Dave, this was great. Thanks so much for doing this. Appreciate it.
Thanks, man.
Appreciate you guys. I really thought you were going to mock me for picking the Raptors not to make the playoffs.
No, you kind of did that yourself. You can apologize if you want.
No, you did the eight ball thing.
You
did it. Took it away from us.
I appreciate it. I appreciate you guys doing that. I thought that's what this call was going to be all about, and I'm here for it.
Thanks,
guys. All right, I'll come back anytime.